surroundings, beginning with her first novel, 2011's The Tale of Halcyon Crane, which was centered around a Victorian house on an island in the Great Lakes. Now, Webb was working on a new book about a woman who takes a job at a Lake Superior artist colony whose haunted reputation comes from some unexplained deaths, but also the past history of the building as a tuberculosis sanitarium. So what was the inspiration for Webb's story? Could it have been Duluth's Nepeming Sanitarium, opened in 1912 and abandoned since 2002, which had its own spooky credentials, having been the subject of an episode of Travel Channel's Ghost Adventures? Wendy Webb's novel, The End of Temperance Dare, was not only a supernatural page-turner, but a 2017 Minnesota Book Award winner.
MN90 is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities. Made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Online at mn90.org.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM Minneapolis St. Paul. Online and archived at kfai.org, the community's true voice.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
I was in a pretty rough place in life at that time. I mean, I had some story ideas, and my wife told me, I think you just need to write. And that kind of floored me, honestly. To have someone who believed in what I was saying so much, to have someone who encouraged me and was like, no, go do this. Clearly, this is what you want. Clearly, you have a talent for this.
Bonjour, hello, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem.
And I'm your other host, Cole Primo. Meet Gwaich for joining us on Native Lights, a podcast and radio show. But it's more than that. At its core, it's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Each and every week, we have captivating conversations with a whole lot of great guests from different backgrounds. We're talking musicians, artists, community leaders, authors, educators, you name it. They have a wonderful mixture of passions, and we talk to them about their gifts and how they shared those gifts with their community. And it centers around finding purpose in our lives and amplifying Native voices. So, Leah, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Hanging in there. How about you, Cole?
I'm doing great. I've got two things I want to say. One thing, I was able to see the Northern Lights in its full glory at our place in Stillwater, and it was an absolute treat, also known as Wawa Tay. So I had to look it up, the Ojibwe meaning behind it. Kind of means like glowing lights and spirits dancing with each other. It also reminded me of one of my other favorite words, Wawashkeshi, deer with the white tail dancing away. I like to, you know, learn a little lesson, but also it was a great experience. And the second thing was I got to listen to my sister's mini documentary or whatever you want to call it, but it was really great. Finding Manoman. Congratulations on all that. You're still working on a film version of it, but great job so far, sis.
Thank you very, very much. It was a long time coming.
Yeah, and it coincided with Indigenous Peoples Day, the release of it. Happy Indigenous Peoples Day. Very quickly, did you want to tell, you know, people how that all came together?
Yeah, so Finding Manoomin, A Search for the Spirit of Wild Rice is a project done with NPR News, my employer, and I set out with a film crew to learn more about wild rice and just try to connect with the sacred plant. So we did a film and an audio companion piece, which is an hour long, and it features a song with me singing and you on guitar, Cole. That was really fun.
That was really fun. Great work and all that.
Thank you.
It was wonderful to hear, and I hope people check it out.
Did you listen to the whole thing?
Oh, you betcha. You betcha.
Oh, wow.
Didn't even take a break.
Enraptured.
No, it's good. All the different voices and having, you know, Marvin, your son, my nephew. It was really great to hear him involved. And of course, old Willie.
Sweet Willie Wine.
Willie Wine, our dad. Sweet Willie Wine. Good stuff, good stuff. But yeah, let's get to today's guest. So today we're excited to speak with Nicholas DeShaw of the Boys Fort Band of Chippewa. He lives in St. Paul and is an author who has written fiction for all ages, from sci-fi, which is one of my favorites, to horror, to picture books. He's greatly inspired by his Ojibwe culture, drawing much of his source material from it and focusing on creating more representation of Native people in his writing. So good to hear that. And he's also a father educator and traditional lacrosse coach. So can't wait to talk with him about all that and much more. And here he is. Bonjour, Nicholas.
Hey, bonjour.
Could you start out by introducing yourself, you know, giving a little background, all that good stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gay. In addition to cause, I'm going to see you today. Sabi kone is a guy getting went to Bawa and then we magna me dash and ama ishka bug zeeping and doing to Bawa wasaj and a car de Michigan guy. So hi everyone, I'm Nicholas Asha, been about 2 Michigan. I'm Eagle Clan, voice for Ojibwe. I live in St. Paul, but I was born and grew up through my youth in Michigan, actually. I am also a writer and educator, and I am just super psyched to be here today. I've been a fan of this show since season one, day one, been following you guys.
Nice.
Wow.
One of the OG listeners. I like it. That's great. Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us. We also like to ask, how are you doing? How's the family?
Family's good. It's a really busy time of the year. You know, as we ramp up to, I don't know, kind of the height of fall, I suppose. There's a lot going on. I've got 2 children. They're wonderful. They're 4 and 5 months. So all of the challenges that come with a young family, but all the joys as well.
What's keeping you busy?
What's not keeping you busy? I mentioned I have 2 children, right? Like I said that, yeah.
It's the sarcasm in my voice, like coming through there. I can't imagine.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No, but I'm a writer too. I've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 writing projects I'm kind of in the midst of at the moment.
That'll do it. As you know, we like to ask every person who comes and shares time with us, what are you thinking about these days?
I just really think about how, especially as I raise a family, the kinds of media my children are engaging with and the kinds of media I wish existed. And some of it does exist and plenty of it doesn't exist. And so I'm just always thinking about more ways to create indigenized, decolonized media around language and culture, especially just more kinds of media out there. That's something I think about a lot.
I love it. Well, thanks for doing that. I know I have a young one and boy, if he can get some indigenous media going, I'm all for it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's more than ever, but it's still a tiny sliver of what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Including getting some Native representation in graphic novels, right?
Yeah.
Had to throw that in there to transition to some of your projects.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of comics and graphic novels for a long time. And I've seen very, very few that I really enjoyed. Like I really felt had a good representation of Native people. So I'm partnering right now with Coyote and Crow Games to create a new graphic novel for them. We're ironing out a lot of details on that, but we're hoping to launch it on Kickstarter at some point. If you're not familiar with Coyote and Crow, it's this really cool concept of what if the colonization of the Americas never happened and technology has advanced to just kind of like really far levels, super sci-fi levels. And then there was also this event that happened where like this asteroid or meteor came across the earth and like sprinkled across this kind of strange power that some people are gifted with and gives them certain supernatural abilities. I mean, the possibilities of storytelling, they are just so ripe. It's a whole tabletop RPG. So, you know, think Dungeons and Dragons. You know, instead of playing in a medieval European setting, you're playing in a sci-fi, futuristic, indigenous American setting. And it's all a Native team that are creating this graphic novel. And then most of the comic, or the game itself, Coyote and Crow, was developed by indigenous team founders. Connor Alexander is an awesome dude. He's Cherokee. Very, very passionate about this kind of stuff. And I've been a huge fan of his since it started. So it's a huge honor to be invited to work with him on this project. And hopefully we'll have more solid news soon. But yeah, it's coming together in some cool ways behind the scenes right now.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're speaking with Nicholas DeShaw, an Anishinaabe author who lives in St. Paul. He's an author and writes for all ages. So what if colonization of Turtle Island never happened, plus superpowers. But like, what goes on in your mind to like build that story from, you know, 500 years ago or whenever it starts? Like, what happens next or what doesn't happen?
I'll start with what I try not to do. I've had great conversations with a lot of people. Lately, my friend, Dr. Melanie Yazzie, who works in American Indian Studies at the University of Minnesota, who I get to work with, we've had a lot of cool conversations about sci-fi, fantasy, genre fiction, and how it tends to be really just fictionalized, fantastical versions of colonization in the end. You know, you think Star Wars, and like, we all love Star Wars, but like, it's a colonial story. Maybe one reason why a lot of these stories really resonate with Indigenous people is because it's so often this ragtag group of rebels fighting against this all-powerful evil empire. It's like, yeah, that's just like Tuesday for us, right? Like, you know, so it's considering very closely, how do I tell a story that is not informed by colonization? Or if it is informed, then I'm very intentional about that. I'm deciding to comment on colonization in this story in this particular way. Like with the graphic novel I mentioned, that's one thing I really think about a lot. Like, okay, well, that's not a context in this world. Then what I try to do instead is focus on relationships. I think in the heart of a lot of storytelling in the West is conquest, is, you know, you save the empire, you save the world, and you get the guy, you get the girl at the end, and it wraps up with kiss and everything's peaceful and stuff. And like, you know, that's fine. But what other kind of relationships can we explore when that's not the problem that you're dealing with? And thinking of the world in terms of not power structures and not products, but relationships.
Awesome. Awesome. From what I'm seeing, you have a variety of writings. So you're working on this graphic novel, but you also do children's books.
So my first children's book that's out right now is called Loaf the Cat Goes to the Powwow. A really, really cool opportunity that I had. Penguin Random House had a number of their imprints who were seeking Indigenous writers to create different kinds of children's literature. And I had a few things I sent to them, different publication houses. They all said thanks, but no. But one person, Nancy Paulson, who has published another Minnesota Ojibwe author recently, I believe, said, you know, this, what you sent me is more middle grade YA, but if you ever get a kid's picture book, let me know. I'd be curious. I'm like, cool, give me a little few hours and let me see what I come up with. And so Loaf the Cat is based off of my wife's cat and now my cat. Her name is Sophia and her nickname was Loaf, because how cats kind of tuck their feet under themselves and look like a little loaf of bread. It's just cute how they do that. Again, I was thinking of, okay, what's a character that people could relate to? Well, most people like cats, or at least enjoy the antics that cats get up to. Cool. And then thinking, okay, what's something that's a really good representation of contemporary Indigenous culture? Well, the powwow, right? Like, that's such a big part of modern Indigenous cultures. Let me tell a story featuring a cat about a powwow that can hopefully be something that kids from multiple places can relate to. So the story follows Loaf. We see things from Loaf's perspective as she tells us about her life and her world and stuff. She has a boy. His name is Charlie. And he's putting together his grass dance regalia to go to dance at his first powwow. And it's her seeing how he puts this together, playing with the ribbons like cats like to do. And then suddenly he's gone. She takes a nap and he's gone. And where is he? Ah. And so she has to track him down. And she eventually, without telling too much, finds her way to the powwow and learns about powwow. The idea with this was, A, that non-Indigenous kids could enjoy this book from the perspective of Loaf. She's learning as they might be learning. And two, Native kids could see themselves in our main human character, who is going to powwow. And that's just a normal thing that he does. It's just part of what his family does. And it's not this strange or exotic or like totally unique out there thing that's like, oh, wow, what an interesting cultural experience we're having. Like, no, it's just, this is what we do. This is who we are. And I really wanted to have that present. And the other thing that was actually a challenge was making sure Loaf never talks. Because in our traditional Ojibwe stories, if there's a talking animal, it's generally a sacred story or a story with protocols around it to be told in a certain way at a certain time. And so I was really careful, like, this is not going to be a talking animal story. And the other reason, too, because, like, those stories in a lot of Indigenous traditions are not just cutesy kid stories. They're stories with a lot of power, a lot of meaning, a lot of depth. And I didn't want to downplay any of that. So I made sure Loaf never talked. And that was a challenge. Again, we see things from her perspective, but she's not speaking. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to write. I learned a lot about publishing. Books take a long time. It took 3 years between when I wrote it and when it came out, which I didn't realize it was that long, but that's pretty normal. I have another book that I wrote that will be out in 2026 with the same publisher. It's on Ojibwe horses, actually. So I'm excited about that one, but it'll be a few years.
Do you find children's books to be more demanding?
It does come with a lot of challenges. A lot of people think like, oh, I could do that. It's just this cute little story or whatever. I'm like, okay, give it a go. Like, you know, maybe you can, but you might find it's harder than you think. The real challenge is that it's so short. Most children's picture books that come out these days are less than 1,000 words. That's less than 2 pages of text. You have to tell a story with a clear beginning, middle, and end that keeps you interested and engaged the whole way. And that's hard. So really, I think keeping a tight focus is important. Children don't have a lot of depth. They don't have a lot of life experience. So they don't have a long-term attention span. So keeping it sharp, keeping it tight, and keeping it as relatable as you can to them while maybe pushing them to consider something new, something they haven't seen before, a perspective they haven't had. I believe children's literature should always be teaching something.
Great, great. All right, well, let's take a step back. Like, what set you down the path that you're on? Like, what inspired your passion for writing?
I remember being an elementary kid, liking to write stories and draw comics, even though I learned I'm not a drawer later on. I love the way a story can take you when you are just so immersed in a story that nothing else exists. If you're a big reader, you probably have moments you can remember where you were reading a story that you really loved and then something happened and it blew your mind or it shocked you completely. And you remember that moment very crystal clear. For me, it was when Dumbledore died in Harry Potter. Spoilers. That was like, oh. And I think it was really when I was in my earlier 20s, I realized that I just love story and I want to create stories and want to create them. And I didn't think I could do it for some reason. I knew I could do it, but I didn't really think I could do it like on any kind of like serious level until my wife really encouraged me to jump into it. I was in a pretty rough place in life at that time. I mean, I had some story ideas and my wife told me, I think you just need to write. And that kind of floored me, honestly, to have someone who believed in what I was saying so much, to have someone who encouraged me and was like, no, go do this. Clearly, this is what you want. Clearly, you have a talent for this. And to this day, my wife, Kateri, is my number one in everything, but definitely in my writing. Loaf the Cat would never have happened without her. That's true for most of my stories. My writing career would never have happened without her.
Wives can be very great when it comes to encouragement. I know that firsthand.
We're lucky men.
Exactly, exactly. So what experiences have you had with people who've read the children's books?
I'm still definitely starting on that path. Loaf only came out in May. So it's been, I don't know, not quite 6 months. But I've been able to do a number of readings. A number of people have, in my circles, have bought the book, have given me feedback. I got to go do a reading at my son's preschool that you had his teacher, Miss Janice LaFlo, on a little while ago. That was so exciting. I got to read the story. And I had all these little Native kids who were just like, eyes on me, listening so closely, really engaged. And that was like, that's why I'm doing this. This is who this is for. This is why I created this. And I was able to give a copy to every kid in his class. I think every artist will tell you, and I know you two are musicians, but like anything you create, there's a piece of you in that. And so for someone to say like what you built, what you made, what's out there resonate with me and means something to me too, as the person who created it, who it means so much to, like, I mean, that's everything, right? Like that's why you do it. When you create a piece of art, book, a song, a movie, whatever, a painting, it's now the world's. It's now the people who receive it. And whatever they do with it, that's done. You don't have any control of that. You don't have any say. And your opinion even at that point, or your intentions even at that point, kind of don't matter, or don't matter as much as they did. Maybe I'll get some pushback from people on that, but I really do feel like that resonates with me at least, how these things can change. And like, even if you had an intention, like, Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam created a song and he may have meant it to be this really dark song, but then people interpreted it as this like really hopeful song. And he's like, I guess I could see that. And he said like the meaning changed for him because of that, even though that wasn't the reason he wrote it. I really appreciate that. I saw this interview recently with Donald Glover to Erykah Badu, and he talks about wanting people to get what he's trying to say in his music. And she says like, Your job is just create something you love. And it's not on you what they do with it or how they consume it. Like, you just feed them. Again, those things really resonated with me. I want to create something that resonates. I want to create something that people can really love, brings a smile or moves them in a way. How they are moved is on them. And I love to hear it because maybe it's in ways I never expected. And I actually think as an artist, as creative, like, that's that much more powerful because you don't know what you're creating. And that's as beautiful in some ways as sitting down with a blank page and creating something totally new, whole cloth. The reaction that you never expect or intended is just as thrilling and exciting as creating the story itself in the first place.
Yeah, you don't get to throw your art out into the world with like little explainers. Even when I go to an art gallery, I'm a little casual. And I don't necessarily read all the little explanations on the piece of paper next to each art piece. I'm just like, you know, I see the art piece first. I have a feeling towards it. And that input comes second.
Yeah.
And it doesn't change that initial feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the value, though, too, is if you ever get to meet that artist, you know, and you can talk about that, like your experience with them and swap kind of creative stories.
Awesome. Talk a little bit about, you know, who inspired you, like mentors along the way, besides, you know, the Native Lights crew.
Yeah, Native Lights, number one. Everything starts there. Yeah, the primo siblings. Yeah. No, I am honestly inspired by you guys. I love what you're doing. I was able to go through a mentorship program through All My Relations Arts for writers, and it was led by Art Colson, who's a local guy. He's Cherokee, so he's kind of a transplant to Minnesota, but has become a bigger name in Native Lit, and especially Native Kid Lit in the area. And he was just so generous with his knowledge to all of us, but he really, I felt, took me under his wing and has given me a ton of opportunities that I never would have had. And that's the thing too, like, we all stand on the shoulders of giants. Nothing is created in a vacuum. We all have the opportunities we have because someone gave it to us. I think also for other creatives that really stand out to me in comics, big one is Sloan Leong, and her multiple books have been really, really fantastic. Demi Macharis and Casey Silver of 80% Studios, I consider them friends, and also they inspire me in their work. Marlon James, actually, the novelist, former local guy, his books, Black Leopard, Red Wolf, and Spider King are incredible. Ta-Nehisi Coates' run on Black Panther was really, really incredible. And then the Silver Surfer run with The Death of Silver Surfer, which is a kind of side story, like non-canon, non-in-universe story by Straczynski, was also just one of the greatest pieces of literature I've ever read. And some of his run on Spider-Man 2 is also very, very good, though he's a bit of a controversial figure in that world, but I think his writing is excellent. You know, one person also I really need to shout out to is kind of an early supporter of mine from college, my former professor, Linda Lagarde Grover. She was someone who really praised my writing, even though my writing that she saw at the time was for her classes. She was such a kind person, such a mentor to me at that time, and has continued to support and promote my work, even as she's launched into the stratosphere of just literature period, let alone Native literature. You know, she's also just a really, really great person.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're speaking with Nicholas Deshaw, an Anishinaabe author who lives in St. Paul, who writes for all ages and draws from his Ojibwe culture.
Kind of random question, which I've never asked before. What is your reading to writing ratio with time?
Ooh.
What would you estimate that to be?
Like how much I read versus how much I write kind of thing?
Yeah.
I'd say it's about 2 to 1. Twice as much reading to half as much writing.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to do that, because you need to immerse in so much stuff. Another author I forgot to mention is Gene Wolfe, who I got to meet. I actually recorded the last interview he ever gave before he passed away. Yeah, if you look on YouTube, Gene Wolfe fan interview, you'll find it. He's a voracious reader. And these days, I have to find more ways to read. So I've actually really switched to audiobooks. 20-minute commute to work, perfect for getting through audiobook. I usually listen to it on double speed just because I want to read so much more. You know, being constantly exhausted, having young children, to sit down with a book actually is very, very tiring these days in a way it never used to be. But so audiobooks are great. But yeah, I think I wind up probably listening / reading twice as much as I wind up writing. Maybe one day that'll change, but you know, I got a full-time day job for now. It's not writing yet.
What's the writing process like? Do you have to find like a spot in your house or, you know, home to do it? Or is it just anywhere you can find? Or do you write on a notepad? Do you write on a computer? What do you do?
I write on whatever the hell I can get my hands on, man. Like, usually it's on my phone or my computer, but it's probably more my phone. And like, I don't prefer that, but it's like, if I'm holding a sleeping baby and I know that I'm going to be stuck there for an hour and a half and I've got this idea or I have a deadline I need to make, let's go thumbs. Let's see if we can bang out here real quick. Like, if I had a word count for how much I typed in with just my thumbs on my phone, I'd probably, I don't know, blush a little bit. I prefer my computer. It's just not always practical. And the other thing too, like I say this to people who struggle with finding writing time, who are maybe trying to get started or whatever. Any writing you do is enough. Check. You've done it. I had a time when back in 2020, yeah, we were on lockdown, everything was slowed down and stuff, but I had my first child at that point and he was the baby. And that's hard. So I would find I'd have a little time in the morning, depending on how long he was okay being in his crib before he'd want to be picked up. It could be 5 minutes, it could be 30 minutes. And whatever I got done, I told myself I would be okay with that. Whatever the amount that was, whether it was a sentence, whether it was 10 pages, I would be like, okay, if I can do more, great. But I've written today, I have created, feel good about that. You have achieved it, check. I always tell people that because whatever you do is enough, especially if you're just getting started, just get something on paper in a document, in a e-document of some kind, however you have to do it. Yeah, be a nut for it, man. Bulldog, sink your teeth into it. Don't let go.
Love it. Love it. Great. Well, thank you so much for your time. We like to end the chat with, like, you know, final thoughts, anything that you'd like to mention that we hadn't brought up.
Yeah.
Sometimes I like to ask what advice you'd give to somebody trying to, you know, get into writing, get into, you know, creating books, all that stuff.
Cool. Yeah. I think I'd say for not just writing, but anyone in creativity, just start making. Make whatever. Doesn't matter if it's good. Doesn't matter if it's bad. Just make it, because once it's made, it exists and it can be improved on. Your first draft doesn't count, as another cliche out there. But now you have a first draft, so you can develop it. And it's not just, oh yeah, it's in my head, whatever. It doesn't have to be writing. Whether you want to do music, whether you want to do film, just create something. Put it out there and you will improve. And I think also just be really, really open to any opportunities you can. If you're trying to get published, if you're trying to get a recording deal or whatever else, put yourself in spaces where you're going to hear about those things. With my first writing deal, I was in I was in a lot of writing groups just on social media. And that's where I saw that they were looking for that. So I was putting myself in places where those opportunities pop up. And that's just grown. I've developed my network. So also develop your network. Spend time with other creative people. Spend time with people who have done the things that you want to do as much as you can. Go to events where those things are happening. And just learn, be voracious. For a long time, I would spend probably hours every week watching YouTube videos on how to create a scene, how to write, what a good character arcs look like, all that kind of stuff. So just always be hungry, always be hunting. And then also be kind to yourself. You know, like I said a second ago, you've created, you've done well, and internalize that as much as you internalize criticism. Internalize that I have achieved something. I've created something. I've done it. I'm doing it.
I want to take that bit of audio and make it a ringtone.
I need to listen to that more. Like, just being happy with what you create. Sometimes I'm way too critical about everything I do. Well, Chimi, thanks for your time, Nicholas. We really appreciate it.
Thanks. You guys too. Thanks again for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm ready to create again.
Exactly. I know, I want to grab the guitar and play some stuff right after this.
Just go.
Get it recorded, get it on the record, you know. Good stuff. All right, well, thank you to our guest, Nicholas Deshaw, an Anishinaabe author. He lives in St. Paul and he writes for all ages and draws from his Ojibwe culture. I'm Cole Primo.
And I'm Leah Lem. Miigwech for listening. Gigawabaman.
Gigawabaman.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
this is Dallas Gold.